It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Richard Campbell's in Las Vegas for his Fabric conference. There is, of course, as always, lots to talk about. Moment 5. Yes, it's still on its way. In fact, now there's a preview update. You can check it out. Good news. Qualcomm says most Windows games will just work on that new X Elite processor. We'll talk about gaming on ARM. And AI, the new Surface Pro 10 and Surface Laptop 6 with Copilot Key built in. All that and more coming up next on Windows Weekly. This episode is brought to you by Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are now using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero trust AI.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell, episode 874, recorded Wednesday, March 27th, 2024, Dark Satya. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Collide. Yeah, you've heard us talk about Collide before, but did you know Collide was just acquired by 1Password? Now, that's really great news. Both companies leading the industry and creating security solutions that put users first. For over a year, Collide Device Trust has helped companies with Okta ensure that only known and secure devices can access their data. And that's what Collide is still doing, but now just as part of 1Password. So if you've got Okta and you've been meaning to check out Collide, now would be a great time. Collide comes with a library of pre-built device posture checks, so you can set it up to make sure that everything that is accessing your network is secured. You can even write your own. So for just about anything you can think of, which means you really get to set the standard for how secure your network is. Plus, you can use Collide on devices without MDM, like your Linux fleet or your contractor devices, and of course, every BYOD phone and laptop in your company. Now that Collide is part of 1Password, it's only going to get better. Check it out. Collide.com/WW. Watch the demo today. Learn more. That's Collide. Collide.com/WW. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show we cover the latest Microsoft news with Paul Thurrott. Lil Pauly Thurrott. Oh,
yes.
From Thurrott.com. Back in Mukunji, I believe. Yes.
Don't rub it in.
Did the robot follow you from Mexico City, or
the robot was a gift from my daughter, who actually built that out of Lego.
Oh, it's nice. Lego! Wow, very nice.
Yeah.
On the right, it's little Ricky Campbell. little Pauly, little Ricky Campbell from Runners Radio, and he is in a glass cube.
Yes, I am. Or being fumigated, one or the other. I think that's where Paul went immediately.
You got a tent.
Yeah, I'm at the MGM Grand. I'm hidden away in a Skyloft because, you know, if you bring 4,000 of your closest friends to a conference, they give you a Skyloft. It's nice.
A Skyloft. Are you in the air?
Yeah, 29 floors up. I'm overlooking the airport. So I watch Janet Airways go to Area 51 every morning.
Wow.
You know, the 737s. Wow. If you're working at Area 51, you park over here, and then you get on the 737. It's all white except for a red stripe along the windows, and they fly you the half hour, and that's the only way in and out of that place.
Wow!
You think with all that alien tech, they could cut down on the flight time?
Yeah, but you see how much that plane glows as it lands. It's something.
Well, I wanted to believe Bob Lazar so much.
What brings you? No, I'm not gonna fall for that again.
You're gonna walk into that one again. Yeah.
Oh, I'll give it to you. What brings you to Las Vegas, Richard?
I'm here for the Microsoft Fabric Conference. Aww. So this is one of the shows that I've been organizing alongside Dev Intersection and some others. And this is
Microsoft. Oh, it's your show.
My show, yeah.
Oh, nice.
And so this is the data analytics, the new data analytics stack that Arun Gulag and a group of brilliant, brilliant minds have been putting together. And yeah, people, folks are really excited about it. This is the first community conference, and yeah, we filled it right up. People want to get on board. This is huge competitive advantages when you do it right. I mean, allowing analysts to drive all the way down to really shape data, and then to retain all of that knowledge effectively, so it can be shared with others. It's cool.
What is the?
We had a 2-hour keynote yesterday, and it was a spectacular.
Nice. What is the nexus between business information, BI, and data fabric?
Or data analytics.
Data analytics.
These are all terms that are intertwined, right? Really, what you're seeing happening now with what Microsoft Fabric is becoming is really taking advantage of the cloud. You know, once upon a time, when we were doing business intelligence, more of that OLAP cube data warehouse approach, you had a limited compute resource. And so you tended to polish the data, a lot of load transform and stuff, just to be efficient enough so that you could, and this is Ralph Kimball's terms, if you're old school in OLAP, to pursue a thread of intuition. You needed the querying to go fast, right? You're slicing and dicing through huge reams of data. And so we'd spend a lot of time as the data engineers getting that data to a shape where you could analyze fast. Well, welcome to the cloud, friends. And suddenly we have all the compute and all the storage we need. So no more polishing your data, really. You put it in a data lake. And they have this concept they call One Lake, sort of like OneDrive. And you're able to organize data fairly easily, so that you have as much compute as you need on demand. So one of the problems that happens with a load transform process, often you're shaving sort of the most interesting bits off the data to make it fit into a query plan. And the lake approach sort of avoids that in exchange for you're using more storage and you're doing a lot more indexing, but you got the compute to do it. So why wouldn't you?
So no more pivot tables, huh?
You can still make them, but they are derived on the fly. You don't pre-compute
in real time.
That's it.
Nice. Do you still have a big dashboard for the CEO so he can see how everything's
going? Oh, yeah. Dashboards are bigger than better than ever. How many graphs would you like today? They announced the new 100% area graph, area line graph that was very, very sexy with smoothed corners. So no rough edges anymore. So nice. The graphs are getting more elegant looking. Good for the C-suite.
They have made for me, Patrick Delahanty has made for me. I wish I could show you it says my TWIT primary systems display. It's right in front of me.
I assume it's modeled after some Star Trek interface.
I wish it were. It has a calendar. It has date and time. Most recently published shows. It has a fascinating factoid. How many days of episodes? 1,058 days, 16 hours, 10 minutes, and 29 seconds of content. In 28,277 episodes.
Well,
but it also tells me a very important thing, how many Club Twit members we have. And I'm very happy to say we are now at 11,437.
Wow.
Isn't that good?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
You had some big goals for this year. It looks like you're on your path.
Well, we're going to do tomorrow we're going to do a Inside Twit. And I think Lisa has said that we're going to have to lower our standards. lowered our goals a little bit. We didn't make goal as far as club membership in the first quarter, but we're working on it. And the reason we're working on it, as everybody knows, media is in trouble, especially podcasting, because advertising is dwindling. And I always thought it would be better to have our audience support us anyway. So that's what we're doing. And you've been great. Thank you, Club Twit members. If you're not a member, I'll just put a little plug in before we get into the show. $7 a month, lots of benefits. You're helping us stay on the air. None of it goes into my pocket. That seems to be a concern. I am not a TV preacher.
You don't use your company like a bank like I do? That's weird.
I am not going to pray for you. Just send it to P.O. Box. No. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit.
You can see it seems to work for all the tech bros.
I think I made a mistake early in life. People said sometimes they would say, well,
like having integrity and
that was ethics? My mistake. Yeah.
Is that it?
They said,
I think it's come to that.
They would ask, you know, well, if there weren't computers, if you couldn't be on the radio, what would you do? And I said, I'd probably be a preacher and I'd probably have a lot more money.
Yeah. Right.
But there you have it.
Yeah.
We did build a little crystal cathedral here in the Brick House Studios, the East Side Studios. So let's talk about Moment 5, because we, God knows, we haven't done enough about Moment 5. I had thought maybe if I missed a couple of shows, Moment 5 would have had its moment. But no.
Would have come and gone.
Yeah.
We'd be talking Moment 6 by now, right?
I thought so. Once a year, though,
there's a question about whether there will be a Moment 6 or whether that is what becomes 24H2, right? So that's an open question for now.
Oh.
But
what are we on now? I'm on 22H2, right? Or no?
Well, you could be on 22H2 or 23H2, same code base, same update path, same Moment 5, by the way.
Oh.
I think at this point, the only difference between 22H2 and 23H2 might be where the co-pilot button is, but even that might not be a difference. I think they're just the same thing.
Well, I'm going to push this restart now button. What could possibly go wrong?
And time-honored Twit tradition.
I'll be back.
And
in
the studio
few.
Reboots.
Everything is right where you left it. Paul actually is in Pennsylvania. Rich is in Nevada. Yeah,
right. Actually, I'm back in Boston. We've gone back in time.
He's in Dedham, ladies and gentlemen. Amazing.
Yep.
So what's up with Moment 5? What are we getting?
What's up with Moment? Yeah, there's been some, in fact, I put this in the notes. I mean, people seem confused. I thought this came out last month. What's going on?
Yeah, I did.
Microsoft announced it last month, and you could get parts of it over some kind of a controlled feature release type thing. You know, you could force it using third-party tools like the Viv tool, but officially, it hits the preview path this week. This is week D, right, for March. And then it will go into stable on patch Tuesday in April. And we know because Microsoft, I don't think we talked about this oddly. We must have talked about this, but Microsoft sometime in right ahead of the deadline for the DMA published a website where they said, we're going to document how we are conforming to the requirements of the DMA gatekeeper products. And actually, I give them a little bit of credit for that. Some other companies that shall go unnamed are more in the kicking and screaming style of compliance. Microsoft seems to have just kind of embraced it. And Moment 5 of the moments we've had so far, these are the quarterly feature update packages, is kind of a minor one, frankly. There's not a lot of big stuff going on. We've already talked about it, so there's no reason to go through it too much. But it's happening. And I'm sorry, I mentioned the DMA compliance website. One of the things that they mentioned there was that they had told European regulators that this Moment 5 update would be fully deployed publicly by the end of April. So
we're a month off.
Preview.
All right.
But you'll get it. You'll start getting it not next Tuesday, the second Tuesday of April. April 9th, I think.
It's a few more shows of talking about Moment 5.
I think we're good. Some of these updates are a big deal. Some of the moments have been big deals. Moment 4 was a huge deal. That was 23H2, right? I mean, so there's been some big stuff. This is not much going on here. I mean, it's mostly minor. Interestingly, Microsoft also released a preview update for Windows 10 yesterday. So week D wasn't just for Windows 11, right? It was also for Windows 10.
But I thought we're not getting more updates to Windows 10, right?
Oh,
for security patches? God,
that was so 1 month ago, Richard. So now we are getting more updates. And this was, remember, I think it was last week we talked about Microsoft started testing additional cards in the lock screen, right? There was a weather card that they tested for about 10 seconds, pushed out the stable, and now they started testing sports, traffic, and finance cards. This is just happening. We're not gonna screw around with this. It's happening. It's happening on Windows 11 as well, by the way. So as expected, as promised last week, as threatened, I guess, they are now testing that as well. And that will almost certainly go out with Moment 5 in stable next month. They've added Windows Spotlight to the desktop. This is a feature Windows 11 has had, if not forever, at least for some time, probably a couple of years. Hopefully it works better in Windows 10 than it does in 11. The biggest bit of feedback I get about Spotlight is that it never seems to, sometimes it just stops updating the desktop for some reason, but it's supposed to give you a new Bing desktop wallpaper every day. And probably
the favorite feature eventually for people is an upgrade invitation to Windows 11. So if you have somehow made it this far and are running Windows 10 on supported eligible hardware, Microsoft would really like you to upgrade to Windows 11, and they're going to start being a little more aggressive about letting you know.
More about aggressive? That. I mean, I'm tormented constantly on one of my desktop machines that I'm still holding at 10.
It's weird. They don't call it a torment. They call it an invitation. But I you know, I guess we have different semantic.
Yeah. Potato.
Yes.
Almost the same, really.
Windows 10 is a little bit like the desktop version of Outlook, of OneNote. Sorry. They told us they were done with it. And then they weren't, you know. So it's back, and now they're updating it again, and here we go. So it's still on 22H2. I mean, they at least stuck to that. 22H2 will be the last supported version of Windows 10. They didn't change that, but they are adding new features to it, most notably, obviously, Copilot, which they did last October, most likely, November, somewhere in that time frame. That's where we're at.
All right.
Sorry.
I can't wait for the next week, in the next month. Who knows what's going to happen next? I'm excited.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to rename Windows 11 to Windows 10, probably. Mm. Yeah, we'll see. We are eagerly awaiting the first Qualcomm X Elite-based PCs. We keep getting more and more indications that these things are actually going to be pretty damn good, you know, not unlike every other Qualcomm chip for PCs ever released so far.
And soon.
Soon-ish, a couple of months, right? Probably in May, be the first PCs.
That's true.
I know. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about some new Surface PCs and some timing stuff, but unfortunately, the time frame for the Qualcomm chipset is a few months away.
I'm pretty excited though about that.
I am too. I'm absolutely going to get one of these PCs. It might be a Surface laptop, we'll see, but I've always wanted this to make sense. I'm at least clear-headed enough to understand it never has, right? I mean, some people can be a little delusional about it, but it has all the
believers, but
I get wanting to believe. I am that person, but
it is. I read an article today that was showing gaming on the Qualcomm on Windows.
Yeah, that's the thing I don't quite understand.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I've been playing around with one of Apple's M3 based MacBook.
Pretty nice, huh? Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And I've only played one game on it, and it runs spectacularly well. But one of the goofy things
about... A Mac native game or a Windows?
Yeah, this board. Was from the store. It was a Resident Evil game.
Yeah, they have Resident Evil. Yeah.
It's like I had one cassette stuck in the car driving across the country. I can't remember what it was. What was the game, Paul? It was... Resident Evil something. One of the recently remade Resident Evils. Yeah,
they also
Resident
have Death Evil. Stranding out. These are all kind of older games, but they play pretty well.
They're still...
They're playable.
They're beautiful looking.
Yeah.
This game is, anyway. Anyway.
Metal is good.
But when you look at Windows games, there's one of the issues with emulation is you don't get on Mac, is you don't get DirectX 12, which is the kind of modern standard. So this is one area where... Qualcomm-based hardware might actually be better, you know, if you want to play games. Not that you would play, you know, not that these things are gaming PCs. In fact, this first generation of chipsets is very much aimed at the ultrabook market, right? These are mainstream productivity.
Long
battery life.
Yeah. But, yeah, they were talking about how, Qualcomm, were at the gaming conference, Game Developers Conference that was last week. They had a session and they were talking about this X64 emulation, right? And there are three levels of compatibility now on Windows and ARM. There's obviously you could directly port an app. If you have a modern app, it's pretty easy to target ARM. If you have a legacy app, it can just be emulated in X64. And then they have these kind of interim libraries that developers can use to kind of bring in some native features to what is otherwise an X64 title. And this could be an app or a game, right? And I guess it's like ARM 64 EC or whatever. It's kind of like create like a hybrid app. So you look at the parts of the application or game that aren't running very well, and you can port just that part of it to ARM, basically, kind of just an interim step. But for games in particular, what they're saying, the headline that games will run fine on ARM seems not to make sense. It doesn't seem believable. But what they're saying, Qualcomm, is that the performance of the GPU is not an issue, right? If it runs well on x86 or an x64 PC with whatever that GPU might be, and you have the same GPU, but you're running on ARM, it will be fine. It will just work fine.
Arguably, the bus speeds are higher. So we'll see.
I mean, it just seems it doesn't seem right, but
this is a side effect of how good the ARM architecture is, that it can emulate faster than native execution. You know, there's a lot of hoogly poogly that goes on inside of an Intel processor to figure out, are you going to go main pipeline or speed pipeline? You've got long instruction set problems. Like, there's a lot of pre-work in every cycle. And ARM just skipped all that, like, because they got to start over. They stayed short on the instruction sets. And so the silicon just works more efficiently. And so in many cases, you're going to be able to emulate really stunningly fast. For a lot more watts, right? Like,
yeah,
it's not going to be as efficient as native by any stretch of the imagination. So yeah, I could probably have a game emulated that ran fine, but it probably consumed twice as much energy as it would have if it was running native.
Right. I mean, I'm very much hopeful for a variety of reasons. The gaming thing, just based on very limited experience on a Mac, I was like, you know, this is not something I would have thought anyone would even bother with on such a computer, and actually it works fine. So,
but is this all just a confidence play, right? It's just to say, listen, these machines are good enough. They can do these things even if you don't need to do them. And so, what your fear is you're going to drop a couple of $1,000 on this machine, and it's not going to run the stuff you need.
That's right. I many years ago, not dating back to Windows RT, I don't think, but probably just to the initial discussions we had around Windows 10 on ARM, back when that was going to be a thing, you know, my basic conclusion was that if this platform is successful, it will just be boring. It won't be even worth
discussing. Don't even notice. Yeah.
You could just buy one, and you will choose a PC based on characteristics like battery life and performance, not on compatibility, right? The problem with ARM to date has been, well, the performance has been terrible. The compatibility, depending on the year, has gone up or down, whatever. But, it's just, it hasn't come together as a total package. So you immediately notice the problems. And if they can get it right, someone who's an average consumer who in the past you'd be like, wait, what did you buy? It won't matter.
Yeah.
For people like us who know what we're doing, we will specifically seek these things out for various reasons.
Yeah. And we'll be more tolerant of the problems too. But if we're happy, we're also prone to going first, and if we're happy, that encourages others to come along. So we'll see.
So far we haven't been that happy, but like I said,
the reality is that most games are written in C++. Sometimes they have .NET involved, but .NET's even easier to make run on ARM. The runtime just has an ARM mode.
I mean, if it's .NET based, it's almost certainly using Unity. And platform does cross-platform already, they handle that stuff. Yeah.
Well, Paul, once upon a time, that's what C was about too. You know, in theory, if you built the libraries out sufficiently, you should just be able to recompile and run on
ARM. Words, but I don't know.
You're cynical because it's wisdom, right? It's actually correct. The probability it'll actually work, it's going to be all the edge cases. And often we're calling into APIs that are very OS specific. And often those OS-specific APIs are platform-specific. You know, the hardware abstraction layer in Windows is long gone. It left us in 2000, and we've been hardware-dependent ever since.
I think that whatever work has occurred on ARM for Windows so far, we can complain about whatever, but by this point, the software side of it is very mature and
able to absorb a lot, too.
Yeah, by all accounts, very well done. So we've been basically waiting on the silicon. So this looks good.
It had to get to this point. It had to be this fast to be able to overcome the inertia of so much code.
Yep. Well, and all the bad memories that the few of us that have spent thousands of dollars on these things and were disappointed can get over, right? So this is just the latest in a long list of indications that this thing is going to be where it needs to be. And actually, arguably the best one just happened as well. Google announced yesterday that Chrome is coming to Windows and ARM in a native version and stable. Starting, I think, next month. It's available now, I think, in the beta channel.
Wow. That really just means they built the pipeline to deploy to ARM. Like that, it probably.
Yeah, but it's, this is also a chicken egg thing, right? I mean, how do you get Google, which by all accounts does not give a crap about Microsoft or Windows, to pay attention to something like this that is absolutely a niche platform?
You have an interesting adjacent story that when I saw these two stories together, mm-hmm. I thought, this is tit for tat.
Okay.
Right? Like the Microsoft pushing through that work on the text rendering.
Yeah.
And Google agreeing to it. Like, so they did some heavy lifting for Chromium.
I mean, look, when I don't remember the year anymore, but when Microsoft adopted Chromium for Edge and made that big shift, one of their big publicly stated goals is that we're going to commit things back to this and we're going to improve all web browsers on Windows. And it's that sounds very altruistic, you know, but the idea here is that we can contribute to this as well. And they have. I mean, this mm-hmm. is the one of several high profile things that they've.
I mean, that team had been collaborating over the rendering engines the whole time, right? The bad guy here was Apple. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. Yeah. You know, generally Microsoft and Chrome
we used to have the four major rendering engines, and now I guess we have three or two and a half, depending on how you feel about Firefox. Well,
and you can argue about how wise it is for everybody to consolidate on Chromium, but rendering is just not that interesting an equation. You were hoping that the digital effluence side of the browser would change. But that didn't happen either.
Well, unfortunately, that's where browser makers are innovating, Richard. So the effluence part.
Treatment is excellent.
Yeah, it's just it's top of mind. What we're alluding to there, sorry, I skipped over that, was that Chromium announced, and mm-hmm. you can see the sheer number of commits that Microsoft tried to make over a long period of time. They're going to implement a Microsoft text rendering technology that's based on what they do at Microsoft in Edge using ClearType. Chromium and Chrome and all Chrome-based browsers, I believe, use a text renderer called Skia. And so the way this is described is that Skia to date has been ignoring the configurations that users make in their PCs for ClearType, which frankly, most people don't make, but it happens for you. And in Edge, of course, that is automatic. It grabs all the ClearType stuff. So Chromium is not switching to the Microsoft Edge text rendering engine, but they're still using Skia, but they are improving Skia on Windows to respect the ClearType configuration. So it's using that code base is as close as they're going to get, and is supposed to be very good. But we shall see, because that's coming out. That's also happening, if I'm not mistaken, in April, when I think it's Chromium and Chrome 124 go live in stable. So it's happening.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cooperation still happening happily. Mm.
All right. So last week, Mike and I originally planned to cover the Microsoft AI at Work event live.
Yeah.
And then I was briefed on what that was going to entail. And I contacted him and said,
forget about it.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's worth doing. Now, here's the issue. It's not that there wasn't anything interesting announced. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That is what it was. So the problem is they had this kind of AI work event, which they've done in the past. I remember that I'd gone to one in September in New York. When I looked over the video, they eventually went public, and the materials and everything, it was very clear that on despite the fact that they talked about Windows 11, Windows 365, Copilot, and Microsoft 365, there was not an iota of news there, like not one new item.
Wow.
There were some new Surface PCs announced, but only for business, which we'll get to in a moment. And I had a weird kind of PTSD flashback. Back in the day, by which I mean the very early 2000s and beyond, Microsoft used to release software on a very kind of what we would now think of as like lengthy schedule, right? So a new version of Windows might come out every 3 to 5 years or whatever. And the problem was for Microsoft that you would get these big bang sales things occurring at those times, and then things would slow down and there was nothing to talk about in between. And so when Microsoft was about halfway between a release of Windows or Windows Server or Office, they would go out and beat the PR drum in what they used to call, they would have momentum updates. And I started like, to me, like the word momentum is actually triggering to this day. Like I still, it still makes me like feel it like weird. Like you would go, you would sit in a meeting for 45 minutes in person back then, right? Before all of a sudden you realized, wait a minute, they don't have anything. They don't have anything to discuss. They're just talking about how successful the thing they did 2 years ago is.
Right.
And those things were called momentum meetings. And I recall I was at a tech ed with a coworker. We were sitting outside of a meeting room waiting for the previous meeting to end. And I looked at this guy I was sitting next to and I said, if this guy says the word momentum, I'm going to slowly close my laptop and I'm going to beat him to death with it. And he opened the door and he said, Paul, sorry to keep you waiting. I'm really excited to talk to you about Windows Server momentum. And we just... We just both lost it. Like, are you going to be kidding me? Like, that's what this thing is. Anyway, that's what that event was. It was momentum. And it was presented as if no one had ever heard of Copilot, how it has improved Windows, Microsoft 365, whatever features are in Windows 11, which aren't much. It was presented as if it were new, you know? So that part was not particularly interesting, I don't think, to a lot of people. It wasn't embarrassing. It wasn't like Panos Panay at Build last year, but it was off. Like it felt weird. The other component, the bigger component to this was the Surface stuff, and slightly undercut by the fact that these are for businesses and are hard to buy. As if you're an individual, you can do it. I mean, you can. In fact, you can buy them direct from Microsoft if you want to, but you really have to go through some contortions of navigation to get to that point. And you know, we're in a weird place too in the release cycle because Intel announced their Core Ultra chipsets. Well, I'm sorry. They announced them last year sometime, but they released them in December. There were some new PCs available then. More came out at CES, along with non-Ultra Intel Core 13th generation based PCs that don't have MPUs. And then, you know, we've been told that next fall they'll go back on a normal release schedule, Intel, and this will be the way it was. But right now we're on this kind of weird cycle. And in that cycle, Microsoft and Surface are once again kind of late to the game in a way, right? If you think about it from a December to September schedule, March, they announced this stuff. It's like, guys, everyone else already did this. So it's good. We have a new Surface Pro 10 and a Surface Laptop 6. Intel Core Ultra chipsets, which are okay, right? I don't think they're not setting any records for anything, but they do have MPUs. And these are the right Surface computers in some ways, right? These are the mainstream ones, right? Surface Pro, that's been a successful form factor for them, and Surface Laptop, obviously.
We can't actually buy these yet, right? Like the website still doesn't have them on there. It's still the 9 and the 5.
I want my Copilot key.
I thought you could buy them. I'm not really sure. Okay, I don't remember. But
I see these announcements, and I'm like, where?
I'm looking past. So they're going to be sold through the channel mostly, but I believe if you go to surface.com, you can...
Where is the Copilot key going to be? Just out of curiosity.
Where's
it going to be?
Key. Yeah.
So whatever that, what was it called? That context menu key?
Yeah.
That used to be between Alt and Control on the right side of the keyboard.
Oh, the old menu key. Yeah.
Yeah, the menu key. If you just like take a screwdriver and dig that thing right out of there.
Save your menu keys, folks, so you can replace the Copilot key.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about the Copilot. Copilot key is important, unfortunately.
Okay.
So
whatever you say.
I'm always fascinated to watch how other people in my industry report on things that I'm also reporting on, right? And sometimes there are big differences. So I saw headlines that claimed these were Microsoft's first AI PCs. No.
Not true.
That's not true.
Yeah. Microsoft Richard owns kind of implies that though, right?
I could actually explain it now. But he owns a Surface Laptop Studio or Surface Studio Laptop?
Surface Studio 2 laptop.
Laptop, right. Which has an MPU in it. Right. It's an Intel chipset and an MPU.
That was the first. That was the real first. That's it.
Well, OK, but then we can go back in time to Surface Pro X, which was the Qualcomm that had MPU in it as well. And they've had a couple of gens of that. So what's going on? Well, as it turns out, Microsoft did not describe this as their first AI PCs. They've described them as their first business or AI PCs for business. But to Microsoft, an AI PC is a computer that has an MPU and a Copilot key on the keyboard. That's literally their definition.
That's how you know.
What Richard's missing on his computer is he doesn't have a Copilot.
You got a Copilot. How are you going to live, crippled. Richard?
I got to return this machine. It's not.
I don't even know how you live with yourself. I don't know.
I'm in agony.
Do you hide it behind a wall and use it with an external keyboard? Like, I don't even know how you do it.
So
I don't know. It's horrible.
So where are these on the Surface page? Where are they?
Right.
Where would I find these? Brand new Copilot keyed NPU based fine
machines. Let's find out. I believe the way to get these is actually to go to the Microsoft store. But let's look.
Well,
so computers, we can go to
store.
That's okay. We can go to Surface Laptop. They're not there. What's going on here? They're actually gone. I found these on the store. What is happening? They're literally not there. That is hilarious. Why? Oh, computers for business. That's why. You have to, nope, they're not there either. I have found them here.
Inside here.
That's crazy. Meet the new AI. Here we go. I'm sorry. Microsoft.com/Surface/Business.
Okay.
Surface Pro details, Surface Laptop 6 details. And that's a PDF file. I think they've changed the site. I literally clicked through to this.
I've done this before. Meet the new AI PC.
That's amazing. See.
Is there a Copilot key on this sucker?
There are Copilot keys.
Why, there it is.
Because you can search, when you search for resellers, one of the resellers that comes up is Microsoft. And you click through to that, and then you get to, here we go. Surface Pro. All right, so it's really hard. Like I said, I told you it was hard to find. So doing this live was maybe a mistake. It is pre-order, so they're not available yet. But you can pre-order, and they are available in a bunch of different configurations. And it's really hard to, I don't know if you found it or not, but I could probably step you through it.
I'm looking at it, right? Aren't I?
Okay.
Yeah, this is a 9, but.
What you want to, no. If you want to get to the 10 and then.
Introducing the new AI PC. Oh, there it is. Yeah. Surface Pro 10. There we go. Whoops.
But it's a PDF.
That's the wrong thing.
Let's just watch the video. Unlock a new era of productivity.
The way to do it is to find
these haircuts are terrible. What is going on? All right. I see the Copilot key. I can spot it. So one of the reasons I'm not crazy about this is because I use Linux. And
I thought you were going to say it's because I have a brain in my head. And I know that there's no this key doesn't make any.
I don't want a
faster.
Copilot key. I got it anyway, right? I know how to get
a Copilot. We could find a way to make this work without a Copilot.
It's branding. Yeah. It's like putting Intel inside a sticker. Oh, what's that? Oh, those are adaptive technologies. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's like having a
sticker. I like the adaptive Atari 2600 joystick.
Yeah, that's pretty funny, isn't it? Hey, it's a classic.
Anyway, you can pre-order them now. It's very hard to find, as we just demonstrated, but it is there. You have to go to the place where it says find a reseller, and then you select Microsoft, and that gives you the Microsoft website. You can actually pre-order. You can, pre-order.
I like that. This is all part of the Qualcomm Elite, right? That's the whole key. No.
What's that? No, these are Intel.
This is Intel. Never
mind. So that's the issue. So Microsoft has long been rumored to be coming up with updates to these devices in both Qualcomm and Intel forums, right? So the Intel forums are available now/soon, I guess, for businesses. And yet another indication that Microsoft believes that these things are going to make sense for individuals. They're actually going to ship the consumer versions just with the Qualcomm chipsets. Apparently, they haven't announced that, but. Huh. That's the story.
So the business will be Intel. It's the mullet of computers. Intel in the front and Qualcomm in the back.
Okay.
I got it.
Which part is the part? I don't even know.
Interestingly, we learned of Microsoft's definition of an AI PC from Intel, which has its own definition, which has nothing to do with Microsoft's, other than the fact that Intel, too, would like you to use an Intel class or an Intel CPU with an MPU, which today is the only generation we have of Intel Core Ultra chipsets, right? That's what we have. So I don't know. Intel, being a kind of a hardware maker, is talking about more technical details. They want the MPU to hit a certain, you know, TOPS value, which is one of those benchmarks we use to measure the performance of an MPU that will probably be out of date in about 10 seconds and, you know, yada, 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 whatever. But there you go. MPU, Copilot, and the new Copilot key.
Ooh. I don't know that this event started out being broken.
Yeah, I wondered the same thing.
Right? I'm wondering if the moves happening on the consumer AI side broke it.
Here's my only concern with that. This was not a live event. They could have just not announced it and pushed it back.
Right.
You know, there was the only thing that tied it to anything was right at the beginning of the pre-canned, you know, recorded presentation. They said, 1 year ago, we announced Copilot, which, of course, was called Bing Chat 1 year ago. But, yeah, okay. We announced Copilot for Microsoft 365, which 1 year ago was called Microsoft 365 Copilot. So it was kind of tied to that, I guess. This was the alleged milestone that necessitated this event. But I don't know. Look, I think Surface has enough cachet and enough interest, even in our kind of jaded tech media world of today, that if they had announced a Surface event, people would have paid attention, right? As many people would have watched this thing. It's still interesting. It's a little bit of a downer that these things are not available easily for consumers.
Yeah,
and it doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense to me, but okay. I think just reiterating the same old stuff that everybody should already know about Windows 365 Copilot, Microsoft 365 was kind of a.
But I think they may have pushed us over to business because they are revamping their consumer AI play, and so this was a way to tuck that out of the way so they don't step on the new folks coming in.
I was, if you did not touch on that, I was going to say, I'm surprised you didn't say it, Richard, but you did say it. Mm-hmm. Microsoft last week announced what, by all accounts, is a reorg. And now, because of more recent news, we know this was, in fact, a reorg. And we'll talk about this a little bit later. Well, we'll talk about it right now, actually. If you looked at the leaked memo from Rajesh Jha and any of the news stories about this Microsoft AI event from last week, you would have come, well, I came away as the Windows guy. My takeaway was, okay, but what about Windows? It was like the one part of this that wasn't part of any of the messaging, you know? There's a team that is responsible for things like, but not only, Bing and Edge and advertising and all that horrible online stuff that nobody likes to think about, but also Copilot, that was moved into Microsoft AI, which is being led by people from outside of Microsoft, right?
Now, will be. Like,
okay. But there were some uncertainties in here around such people as like Kevin Scott, right? The guy who put together OpenAI and Microsoft, and it's like, oh no, don't worry, you're still the AI guy, some of this felt weird to me. So the guy who was in charge of that team, Bing, Edge, Copilot, etc., said, yeah, no, I'm not doing this. I am not moving under this new team, and I will not work for this man.
Yeah.
And it's not clear today whether that means he's leaving the company or he's looking for a job somewhere else at Microsoft. The claim is that he's going to try to find a new role at Microsoft. But I feel like any second now we're going to find out this guy's left. I'm surprised there isn't more pushback like this, right?
I disagree. I think Microsoft knows what they're doing in the enterprise. I think M365 Copilot is a hit.
Yep.
And it's big. And I think Satya is unhappy with the consumer adoption and everything they were doing was not working, and he doesn't know what to do, but it wasn't what they were doing. So he is literally shaking the Etch-A-Sketch.
Okay. Right? Like, I don't think you need to bring a consumer over. Nobody from the outside of Microsoft needs to tell anyone at Microsoft that Bing is a horrible brand.
Yep.
And is the Achilles heel of this entire endeavor.
Well, and I think, remember, Satya comes from Bing too. So he's got his own issues there. Like, and the opportunity to grab Suleiman, these two guys, the DeepMind guys, get them. That's a score. You know, there's a dozen people in the world at this caliber for AI.
It's fine. I'm just saying there are all these guys at Microsoft who are qualified and have years and years of experience.
Yes. And I have to think a lot of them are like, what are we doing?
I don't know. We'll see. Like I said, my take on this is just.
But it's also the way that he organized it, that he very much isolated it from the rest of the company.
Hold on. I mean, first of all, my opening point here was that at the time of the announcement, big chunks of what I think of as their kind of consumer facing front end stuff went into this group.
Yep.
But not Windows, or at least not explicitly. Not explicitly.
Yeah.
So now that this guy has left and Rajesh Shah, who's basically in charge of Microsoft 365, we'll call it, revealed more details in a memo that has been leaked. And so we finally realize what's happened to Windows is almost nothing, right? It's basically it's the same as it was before. Windows and Surface are together again, or still, I guess maybe is the right way to look at that. But we have this, it's weird. They use this term internally, partnering, right? So when the Microsoft AI organization was announced at that time, Rajesh Jha and his organization were going to partner with Microsoft AI on the AI things that would bleed into his products, meaning Microsoft 365 Copilot, Windows 11 Copilot, but also presumably some of those AI experiences we get in Paint and Photos and elsewhere, that kind of thing. Microsoft Edge, right? Which is not just Windows, but has its own kind of Copilot-y stuff going on. So there's a whole kind of list of stuff that I guess I just has more clarity now, but I don't really feel that. I guess what I'm saying is Windows was an unknown quantity when this announcement was made, and a week later, it's like, okay, now we know what's happening, and it's nothing has changed basically. So I'm curious. We'll see what happens with this man.
Varuna mentioned in the chat there about Satya saying, and I went and found the real quote where Satya said, "We want to move people from needing Windows to choosing Windows to loving Windows."
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken,
that was in 2015.
Holding Windows hostage until it falls in love with you.
Yeah. I took great exception to that quote when he made it. I wrote an editorial about it at the time. And if you look at the events that have occurred since then, nobody followed that.
No,
as a rule of any kind, they've done everything they can to make people hate.
2015, Windows, I mean. He was a year and a half into being CEO. about the love period, and it's before the AI bomb went off. And
you don't have to love us; just buy us.
And now we know Dark Satya has appeared.
Dark Satya.
Oh, look at the moves he's made the past year and a half. This is by far.
Oh no, I've done a complete 180 on him because of the last year.
Really?
Or so. Yeah. Yep.
From positive to negative, or from negative to positive?
That might be the wrong way to even think of it. I thought of Microsoft as being unique among big tech companies in having what, for lack of a better term, I'll call the ethical high road, the ethical...
They were going to be the kinder, gentler tech giant.
Yes. And it's very obvious now that
they're just a tech giant.
Just marketing, and I fell for that, and I'm stupid for it.
But I think an element of this is what was going on inside of the company, which was Satya very much was like, we're all going to play and work together, or people are going to get fired. And, his one Microsoft mantra was an internal mantra primarily, which, by the way, largely worked. Like, you do not get promoted at Microsoft if you don't pass a cross-team 365 eval, right, at certain levels.
Yeah, you're describing literally the term partnering, which I think is so important to Microsoft's legacy and history. And it seemed like under Satya Nadella that this tradition would continue into this kind of, at the time we thought of as the cloud era. And this was a company, you know, I've talked about this a lot with, you know, Google and Microsoft specifically, how these two companies should be partnering more and not at each other's throats. I feel like a lot of the antagonism comes from Google, frankly, Microsoft. But then again, Microsoft has been pretty aggressive anti-Google in the Epic trial and elsewhere, trying to change the way app stores work and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of animosity on both sides. But yeah, you're right. The past year and a half, I guess we'll call it, we've seen, well, God, this company didn't have a heartbeat. The argument would be
he's now gotten the company in alignment and now he's taking it for a ride. And this is his big win. Yep. And that would be one thing on it.
I can't argue with the fact that it appears to be working,
yeah.
Right? And what I mean by that is for a publicly owned shareholder-driven company like Microsoft.
If you're a shareholder, you're awfully happy.
Yep. And my complaints about the insurification of Windows would not be of much interest to those people.
Because they're like,
but look at the stock price. I mean, they're doing something, right?
But this is the path to de-certifying Windows, is to bring in external forces that are not mired in all of that and allow a rethink of it under the context of,
well, except
AI is the most important thing.
But Windows is the one thing that's not under that company, under that organization. That's the problem. The guy running Windows now, who I happen to like, by the way, he's a nice guy. He's been there for a long, long time. I don't know. I always have hope.
But it's what it takes. It's what it's going to take. Like you really, I'm excited the prospect of separating enterprise Windows from consumer Windows.
Oh my God. Yes. This has been the dream for a long, long time. This is another conversation we would have had, I mean, probably 20 years ago, which is, look, all that matters is the app model. They can look completely differently.
Yes.
Why don't they?
There's an argument leave Windows 10 Enterprise alone. Just do security patches. The Enterprise is going to use M365 Copilot anyway, so don't worry about that.
Yep.
Now go rampant on a consumer version of Windows. It's different, and it needs to approach large language models differently for consumers because they're not sitting on the idea of sitting on a pile of enterprise data that needs to be utilized effectively. That's a very different proposal from taking that a similar tool and applying it to your life.
I was just talking to some folks who were saying, everyone's so excited about getting all their data into Copilot because, that will be that finite set of data that we know that, Copilot and other AIs work well.
I remember excited to put all our data into social media and that went really well.
the point that these people made to me was that, I don't know, I can't speak for every company on earth, but our data is garbage. I mean, why would I want to feed this thing our data? I mean, we have,
I'm telling you, I'm at a conference right now with thousands of people whose one of their key responsibilities will be on the Microsoft AI path to get your data estate in order, right? That is the tagline.
I'm sorry, but speaking of tags, what you're describing is almost metadata, right?
It's like,
if we could just clean up this data, we can search it and we can find things.
It goes along with, yes, the system is secure and yes, the check is in the mail. Like it's all the same. You're never going to get there. It's a journey. But every CIO's fear right now is twofold. I'm going to miss the AI wave or I'm going to jump on the AI wave and blow this company apart.
Yeah.
And so, you're trying to skinny down the middle of that
line.
This is a
scary take on the red pill, blue pill dilemma.
Is it?
I mean, I don't know. We'll see.
Let's take a little time out to enjoy the AI that refreshes. And when we return, a little bit more.
It's a burst of AI in my mouth.
Who thought?
It tingles.
Good AI.
It's got AI inside. Wow. I'm going to do this as an actual human reading a commercial. How about that?
I love it.
That's the AI prompt I'm using. Respond as if you were a human reading a commercial. Our show today brought to you by, it's very, very good, isn't it? ACI Learning. You know these guys. For years, IT Pro, since they started in 2013, have been advertising on this show. Well, IT Pro has merged with ACI Learning, and that means great things. They've extended their capabilities. You've got more support for IT teams. And, of course, they're still the place to go for anybody who wants to get into the IT business. Let's talk about teams, though. ACI Learning covers all of your team's needs in audit, in cybersecurity, and information technology training. Everything you need to keep your team up to speed, and nothing you don't need. That's kind of important. In fact, you're going to get your own account manager is going to work with you to make sure that you're not wasting anybody's time. The account manager will say, okay, now what is it that you need to work on? And they've got some tools that'll help you do that. And here's the training you're going to need. It's good for two reasons. One, you're not spending money on training you don't need. Two, people on teams who are getting training don't want to be trained in something they already know. That's a waste of their time. So they're going to love this because they're leaving unnecessary training behind. And by the way, they also, and we know this from 11 years of experience, love these great videos from ACI Learning. They're entertaining. They're engaging. They've kept all the personality and fun of IT Pro TV and the trainers too. These are people who are experts in the field. That's number one. That's job one. They've got to really have expertise. But number two, they care about it. They're passionate about it. And that makes them great teachers because that passion communicates to your team. So let your team be engaged and entertained while they train. They'll get more out of it. You'll get more out of it. Short format content, 20 to 30 minutes, whenever's convenient for them or convenient for you. And man, the library has so expanded under ACI Learning. Now 7,200 hours to choose from. And that's not old, dusty stuff. This is all content that's fresh, that's appropriate, you know, because tests change, software changes, the criteria changes, the things you need change, security's changing rapidly. So all of this content is brand new. That's one of the reasons they have all those studios, I mean, 8 studios running Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, making brand new, fresh content. It's a really great training opportunity. Visit go.acilearning.com/twit. go.acilearning.com/twit. For teams of any size, but your discount can be as high as 65% and get a free trial. So fill out that form. Find out how much you'll save on an IT Pro Enterprise Solution plan. Up to 65%. That's go.acilearning.com/twit. We thank them so much, as always, for supporting all of our shows. You're watching Paul Thurrott, Richard Campbell, Windows Weekly. Paul in his ensconced back in PA with his with his Lego R2-D2, which is really cool looking. Yep.
Really, it has a little removable lightsaber.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
You know, like it shoots out like in Return of the Jedi.
Wow.
It's nice.
Did she build that over the holiday or something?
Yes, she did.
Wow. You got to do something when you're stuck at home.
I said, I can't believe you built this yourself. And she said, I knew if I gave it to you unbuilt, you would have thought of it as more of a punishment than a gift.
So true. So true.
That's right. You've given me like something to do for some reason. Thank you.
I was almost going to name this show Momentum just to bug you.
But it's. We could go back and look. I wouldn't be surprised if this has come up in the past.
Yeah, we might have used it. So I'm going to call it Dark Satya.
Yeah. You got to get like the red eyes and the.
Yeah.
You know.
I think the first appearance of Dark Satya was the Sam Altman firing.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, we don't know, but. And I'm sure somebody's writing the
book. By all accounts.
G. Like, Pascal Zachary's got to be working on this book, right? Satya Nadella, sitting in his morning coffee, reads the headlines in the newspaper, rushes to the phones.
First of all, you know it's morning tea, and he's reading the cricket scores.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
Between the cricket scores, Sam Altman.
He's like,
fired.
He got the actual paper, and he's like, "Don't tell me what happened." Everyone else is like, "No one knows what happened, Sergeant."
Cricket, we don't know. Satya,
nobody's following.
How do you even know who's won in cricket? You don't.
Yeah, three days went by. Everybody's asleep.
Yeah. Richard, you probably know how to play cricket because you're a New Zealander.
I'm a really Canadian, and we all stare at cricket sideways like the rest of us. Okay. I generally only learn cricket rules while drinking heavily, which means when I wake up in the morning,
you don't remember a thing.
That's it.
Right.
All right. What's next? I've lost track. Are we going to talk about AI and Microsoft Teams?
We sure are.
How exciting.
Two great tastes that go together.
Oh,
Yeah. So the other day, look, again, momentum, right? You know, Microsoft is saying that Microsoft 365 Copilot is saving 11 minutes a day per user over 11 weeks is a million something somethings and yeah, whatever. Anyway, obviously, they are going to be bringing more AI capabilities to Teams. These are the two big pushes at Microsoft 365 right now. So, you know, you get Copilot in a meeting chat. So you're in a chat with other people. You'll be able to interact with Copilot and get summaries, et cetera, during and after the meeting in the Compose box, right, where you need help writing, just like you can get it today in Word or wherever else. Intelligent call recap. It's all, this is all, honestly, this is all 100% obvious, every one of these things. Automatic camera switching. It's just like, okay, for Teams rooms, right? That makes some sense. So you have, in other words, it's not you with one camera or one system switching cameras. It's a Teams room where someone speaks up and that person's in frame, et cetera, et cetera. We already have stuff like this, but, you know, AI makes everything better or something like that. Yeah. So
the transcription summary is the thing.
Yep.
And yep. You know, the best part about it is that every time you've ever had a secretary, or, you know, and in secretary, I mean the role, not the not a person per se, but somebody who's doing the notes for a meeting.
Yeah.
You didn't like this, the set of notes. You went after the person, right? It was an instant ad hominem attack of, you know, you misinterpreted yep. this meeting. Now we have software to yell at. That's miles better.
So I got to,
there's no good, not going to be an HR call out of it. It's perfect.
Yes, here we go. So I had a Teams meeting recently with a partner, I'll call them. And let me maybe put this in kind of a dark mode. I don't know why this is so bright, but
you are illuminated.
Yeah, I know. I like how he glows when he's looking at it.
Anyway, that's not going to work. Anyway, they sent me by email the summary of the meeting generated by Teams.
Right.
And it's interesting on many levels, but let me see if I can find it. Yes. It says, Paul suggested going to a shooting range instead of an axe throwing place.
Good on you,
Paul. I want to
be
super clear about this. I have never once in my life recommended such a thing. That's crazy.
Was that
talk.
The AI talking? That's, oh, yeah, that's hysterical. Oh, bless its heart. Oh, bless its heart.
I don't know. You know, we'll get there. Maybe.
Wow. A shooting range. Wait a minute. This is the summary of the meeting.
Yeah,
minutes?
The summary. It's one of. It's a surprisingly long summary, and I actually missed it when I read it, and someone else pointed it out later, and I was like, come on. I said that? I didn't say that. Anyway, it doesn't matter who said what, but, you know, now AI is, like, pointing a finger at me. Like, what's...
Paul said... oh no,
I'm not
Paul.
On trial here.
What's you said... Wow.
Yeah, exactly, right, the ultimate you said.
Exactly. You said...
Wow. So, anyway... one thing that's come up a bunch recently, and Leo, you might have missed out on this little bit of excitement, but there's a grid of AI capabilities across Copilot, and you can look at it like here are the capabilities listed on one side, and here are all the places you can get Copilot. And just as was the case with Microsoft 365 features over a several-year period, Microsoft will announce a new feature for something, and it will plug into one of the places, but not all of them. So get out your bingo board, because we got two more little pegs to put in this grid. Designer, which is the new name for what used to be Bing Image Creator, and Copilot Pro. Sorry, not Copilot. Copilot Pro is the consumer subscription that is sort of almost exactly Copilot for Microsoft 365, but for individuals, are both coming to the Microsoft 365 mobile app. So if you have Microsoft 365 on your iPhone or Android today, you will have seen that Copilot is front and center in that thing now, baby, because of course it is. And in the same way that you can access, I think it's Word, PowerPoint, and Excel functionality without having to install the separate apps, you're going to be able to do designer image creation and Copilot Pro capabilities in this app, which is interesting because it literally means in some cases that some of those app specific functions, like we get in, say, like Word, which like text generation, will be available in the, I'm making this one up, I'm actually not sure if this is one of them, but in the Word component of the Microsoft 365 mobile app, right? Not just in the standalone Windows Word mobile app I'm surprised I can even keep this sort of straight. Anyway,
amazing.
It's confusing. So these will both happen by the end of April. I think the Android version is available in preview now. If you're into this kind of thing, to me, the Microsoft 365 mobile app is kind of perfect because you don't want all the Office apps on your phone, really. But sometimes you do have to deal with these things, these types of documents. And, actually that app works great. So it's nice having the one app. They're going to overload it, so it will become stupid. And then we would have talked last week about the fact that we knew that Build and Google I.O. were both happening in May, and it was only a matter of time before Apple announced WWDC 2024, and now they have. And not surprisingly, it will be full of AI goodness. Presumably Apple and or, I don't know, Google, OpenAI, and whomever else will come to some sort of agreement before this date so that we can find out who they're going with, I guess, on the AI stuff, because it seems like they're not going to be going
alone. They can deal like everywhere they can.
Yeah.
I would love it if they did something like, Perplexity does. I know use
Arc. Like an open model kind of.
Yeah, Perplexity, plug-in. You choose the model. You can have OpenAI, you can have Gemini, you can have whatever you want.
I think as you say that, I agree with you. That's an awesome idea. Apple will never do that.
No, right? You know why? Apple, because somebody's going to write them a big check, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That's why. No, that was, Google's going to give them billions to make it Gemini. Microsoft's going to counter.
You're 100% right.
Yeah.
You are right. There is prior behavior to suggest that is what they're going to do. I was going to take a slightly less cynical stand on this, which is kind of bizarre for me. But I was going to say something like Apple will decide which you can use where, because they will pick in their own little bespoke way which one's best. But you're right. They'll just get a big check.
That's the rationalization Apple is going to publish.
But the
real reason is who writes the bigger check.
Yep. You're right. You're right.
I don't see OpenAI
writing any checks.
But Microsoft might. Wouldn't it be interesting?
Microsoft's never been in this conversation, oddly enough.
Well, we don't know. It's a rumor. We don't know who's talking to whom.
I know, but come on. You're telling me this wouldn't have come up somewhere, these two guys?
Yeah. I don't know. You're right. OpenAI is not going to write a check. So I think Google's going to win this one.
Google, OpenAI takes checks. They don't write checks.
Yeah.
Well, and this that's the thing, not their business model.
You're not talking about a minor increase in cost to sign up X many billion iPhones.
Right.
Like nobody can afford that. I don't even know that Google could afford it, but Google needs it.
I raised a theory, on MacBreak Weekly yesterday, which is because Apple. Mm-hmm. So the reason Apple's doing this, obviously, is so that if there are hallucinations or privacy issues, well, blame Google. It's not our fault.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
But I also wonder if Apple might not try to. We don't know. I mean, again, this is a rumor. Use the models on device.
That's right.
And do it locally.
Right, the Gemini Nano model or something.
Yeah.
They'll announce we're the first phone that has whatever the next one up is, right?
Right.
Like other phones have Nano, but we have Gemini, whatever it's called.
And then it does it. That offloads Google. They don't have to, they make the model, but they don't have to worry about all those billions of users. But it also reassures users because it's on device, so it's private.
They already have the slogan. What stays on your iPhone or happens on your iPhone stays on your iPhone. It may be complete nonsense.
Yeah, it was a lie,
They still have
to
look. Whatever they do is going to be really interesting. I'm curious.
They're so far behind, right? And
I think they started pricing what it was going to take to build their own, and
went,
we can buy a lot for this.
Well, they also have this advantage.
We do have infinite cash in the bank. Why don't we just buy something?
Right. Yeah.
We'll see. I don't think Apple and AI really go together, to be honest.
Well, they were very early to the game of, in fact, they almost invented it in a way, the on-device AI.
They have the hardware.
And this hybrid model, I think, is something the rest of the industry has kind of adopted. And they've been talking, they would call it machine language, but they've been talking about how they've been using these capabilities on device for several years now. I mean, I'll tell you this, because I never give up an opportunity to, kind of crap on Samsung. Samsung put Google's thing on their phone, and they have their little remove stuff from photos, Galaxy S. It's terrible. So now they're bringing it to more phones. So if you've ever used a Pixel and you've done this magic eraser thing, it doesn't, it's not always perfect. I mean, I mean to suggest that, but my God, it's really good actually. And then you do the same thing on a Samsung Galaxy and you're like, yikes, you know, it's not even close. Like it's, there's something wrong with it. So, Samsung, if anything, is providing a model for Apple to look at for the pitfalls of what can happen when you just add AI willy-nilly all over the place on a phone, because it's going to feel like a, you know, a weird little pockmarked, the messages app gets this AI, the photos app gets this AI, that, you know, that's what it looks like today on all other phones, right? So maybe they'll at least learn a lesson from that and be better. I mean, this is the promise, right, of that ecosystem. We'll see.
Yeah.
I wrote A1, not AI, but yeah, Galaxy AI is coming to more phones. So if you have an S23 or any of the current generation folding phones, tab, I think it's S6 series tablets, that Galaxy AI stuff that debuted on the S24 series back in January, I think, is coming to your devices starting tomorrow. And it doesn't matter where you got them. It's, remember the bad old days? Oh, you got it on AT&T? Sorry. It's going to be a couple of months. No, it doesn't matter. You got it at AT&T, US Cellular, Verizon, T-Mobile, Samsung.com. Doesn't matter. Like, it's just going to, it's coming to everybody. So you'll get that soon. You know, like a virus or a cold or something.
I do wonder if Google's going to have a AT&T experience if Apple goes full bore.
I thought that and forgot it immediately when Leo was talking about earlier. I was thinking to myself, oh, you mean like when Apple blamed all the connectivity problems on AT&T?
Well, and
AT&T, the only company that would take a bet on the iPhone,
and like, AT&T,
they just threw them right under the bus.
CEO said the unlimited data was the worst thing he'd ever done.
Yep. Oh, just a huge mistake. Years later, what AT&T did to get rid of those plans, because I got that plan the day the iPhone came out, right? The unlimited plan. And they stopped going to higher speeds. They stopped, you know, you couldn't do anything with it after a while except be online at a horribly slow speed forever. So eventually I wanted to get a new phone or whatever it was. It's like, you're going to have to switch the plan. You know, this thing's been grandfathered in, you know. So I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to do this. I went to the store to do it. And the woman said, you sure you want to do this? And I'm like, I have to, you know. And she said, I feel like I'm killing a unicorn.
Oh,
you're like, you know, the last one.
I hear you, but I mean, I got to get, but I don't remember if it was a new phone or I don't remember what I was doing, but I had to, you know, like
a lot of people had to do that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Everyone did eventually.
As long as they could. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Now we have unlimited plans, but you know, it's all good.
All plan has a limit in it somewhere, you know, just crank a few terabytes through, you'll get a call.
Exactly. Well, yes. Yeah. Or just, you'll notice something. That's for sure.
Yeah.
And that's it. That is our AI story. I think that's everything. This is actually for 2024. This has been pretty light on the AI side somehow. Although there were several.
It's the calm before the storm, Paul.
Yeah. Well, developer season is upon us.
Mm-hmm.
I think AI, I don't know about you guys, but I think AI has some legs.
I don't know.
I'm still not sure it's real. I think it's a scam perpetrated by Microsoft. Hey. Oh, no, wait. That was someone on my site who said that. someone literally said that. It's like, I don't know how disconnected from reality you need to be.
There are people, though. In fact, we've had them on the show who, you know, really think this is a hype cycle, kind of like blockchain, where it's really not going to, it's going to peter out and not going to make a big difference.
Yeah, no, GitHub Copilot is my anchor on that. Just too much productivity benefits.
I completely agree.
Yep. Yeah, I there are far too many examples of real-world benefits. Yeah.
You saw me last year, how uncomfortable I was with how big this hype cycle was.
Yeah, me too.
I was very worried, but as real people doing real development were saying good things. But for me, it was when the PMs started ringing in. Yeah. It's like my whole team is 25% more effective.
It's when we had experience of how useful it was that we went from skeptics.
Yeah.
I don't want to say believers, but people who see the value.
But to understanding there is value here, right? I subscribed to Copilot Pro back in January, assuming I would find it completely useless and would maybe move on to the next thing, test a couple of different things. I've not stopped paying for it. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
No, I'm now in the habit of something I used to do anyway, which is I get into a class, I start writing my comment, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is what I intend to do here. And Copilot writes the code while I'm writing the comment.
Wow.
And it gets 80% of the way there from the comment.
What language are you, right? using that?
That's C#.
C#. Yeah.
But it works. It'll do that with Python, too. I've done it with Python.
I do it with Common Lisp, although I made a custom chat GPT for it. But it is replaced flipping through hundreds of books or dozens of books.
Yeah.
It's replaced my brain.
No, it's what's cases. Replaced is Stack Overflow. And going off on some...
That's what it's replacing, Stack Overflow.
For the afternoon where you... look something up and then you go and you click and you try things and nothing works. And then suddenly it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You're like, what the hell was I doing? Yeah. You don't even remember why you were there in the first place.
You're so deep in the rabbit
hole. In the same way that, you know, like a lot of the IntelliSense capabilities in Visual Studio kind of kept you where you were, which is its own form of efficiency and productivity. You know, being able to solve problems, because no one knows how to do everything. We all have to refer to things or whatever. Keeping you there is almost 50% of the battle, and then solving the problem for you there, I think, is the next level benefit.
You know, I used to write out the comment because it helped me write the search the searches to go into Stack Overflow.
Yes, exactly.
I don't have to do that.
That's hysterical. Right. I don't let it write my code. I mean, I very rarely will paste code in, but it sure is helpful for pointing you in the right direction.
Yeah. No, it's the way that it's integrated into Visual Studio. Literally below the comment, the code is appearing as I'm describing what I intended to do.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic.
Because I also, you know, I pay for, like you, Paul, I thought, well, I'll try this for a month or two. I still pay for, you know, ChatGPT. And for Perplexity, I pay. And because I had used different models. I even have a local model running. So I was trying to learn a new concept, pattern matching. And, you know, none of the books had a really satisfactory example, and there wasn't one online. So I thought, well, I'll ask Perplexity because it's, still has access to the web. It's not one of those canned LLMs where my knowledge has stopped in March of 2020. It's got access to the web. It wrote me out a page. It wasn't huge, but a page that clarified stuff that I was not able to understand from any other source. I was blown away.
It's to be clear, it's not just like software development. I mean, some of the productivity features they've added to the apps in Copilot for Microsoft 365 are really exciting and kind of speak to that notion of, you know, you may spend your day in Excel, but you're not a Word expert or a PowerPoint expert and you need some help to get over some hump, whatever it might be. But they're also just kind of simple, kind of consumer-focused things where the video summarization features, right? Or podcast summarization features or whatever.
Sometimes you
can use it to get an answer, but you can also use it to know whether this is something you might want to pursue further. In other words, how much time could you waste watching a video, hoping to see the answer to a question, only to discover it's not there? You know,
right.
I mean, I guess you could yourself manually copy and paste the transcript and go try to find the term you're looking for and maybe, you know, something like that. But like, this is just useful. And I kind of made fun of it earlier, but Microsoft had that quote about, you know, 10 whatevers of 10 whatevers in Microsoft 365 Copilot has resulted in whatever million something. And it's like, well, actually saving time is important. And this was the argument for the cloud, right? You know, I guess we could hire a team of people to manage our Exchange server, build out this infrastructure, and do all this stuff. But remind me, we're not an email company, right? Like, we sell widgets. Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
Like, why are we spending time, money, and effort on this stuff? You know, I think freeing people who are whatever they might be, software developers, writers, presenters, you know, whatever, market, whatever they are, who cares, from the rigmarole of day-to-day life and letting them focus on the job at hand is... This is promise realized.
What productivity is about. So
yeah, that's the point. I think. I feel like AI meets this bar and will continue to do so. Look, our job collectively is to point out the stuff that's nonsense and say, look, some of this is hype and it's not going to make it. You know,
I'm on the go for the M365 Copilot case study. You know, that'll be a Ryan's episode, but and I haven't got one yet, but it's coming, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, we'll see if the usual suspects show up, you know, Forrester, et cetera, et cetera, and yeah, what they have to say. I'm curious.
You want a Columbia Sportswear or, you know.
Yeah. Like a almost a customer profile.
Yeah, you want a customer that said, here's the performance boost we got when we were able to put an LLM into the knowledge base that is our company. All of that corporate knowledge and save time to move faster.
Yeah. Look, I think we all went through like the seven stages of grief with AI, because I remember my initial pushback against paid AI services like Microsoft 365 Copilot. It was like, hold on a second. You're telling me I as an individual can buy Microsoft 365 family for six people, terabyte of storage, all the apps, blah, 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 whatever. So that works out to whatever that is, $6-$8 a month or something. And I'm going to pay $20 a month per user what kind of an upsell is that? You don't upsell me by 250%. You upsell me by 11%. Like
an E3, it's $65 a month.
Yeah. And it gets 20% on that side. Yeah. But then you have that conversation with people like, hold on a second. You're acting like this amount of money per month is a lot of money, but when it saves me, whatever, from having, you know, or just opens up, like in my case, for example, just something stupid, like I create graphics for articles on the web, right? My initial thing was like, well, I'm going to use this for like the paid premium articles because, you know, those are important. I'll never use these for news articles. And then after a while, like, well, actually, you know, and there's no version of a world where I could go to a friend of mine who is a graphic artist and say, all right, this is what I want you to do. Create four images based on what I'm about to say. Come back and show them to me. I won't like any of them, but I'll say this one's close. Make these changes to make four new images based on that, and then come back again. And I might or may not have, you know, whatever. That's impossible. So it's not, this is not a direct savings of money per se.
No, and
it's also a capability that was impossible before.
Yeah, you just wouldn't do it.
Just couldn't do it. You wouldn't even dream of doing it. It's stupid.
Yeah.
And now it's easy.
Don't you worry though, Paul? You're a designer. Don't you worry that it takes food out of the mouth of designers?
Leo, I can see the event horizon on my retirement. I can see it. It's
That's why you and
peaking.
I don't care.
we're ready
to give in anyway.
The argument I have against it is you would never have gone to a designer for that. This is work that would not have been done.
So I mean, so someone asked me a simple question, like, given what's going on with AI, would you recommend going into a college student, perhaps going into this? Into software development as a career right now, you know, what's the recommendation? Unfortunately, that's going to change in the weeks and months ahead. We'll see, but
it's just, if your code is prompts, fine. What difference is it? You still need a person to figure out the problem space.
That's where I landed. It was basically that in something that important, especially we'll always understand there needs to be a human being there. And look, the training might be a little different. When I was younger, and I would have gone to school, I did go to school for this, you learn programming languages, and that's what you did. When my son went to school, he learned about psychology and user experience and accessibility, because now that field is different. It's not engineers creating apps. There's a team of people. They need to understand all these issues when they create user experiences for ATM machines and cars and whatever it might be.
The coding part was the easy part. Defining the space is the hard.
The knowledge domain has always been the tricky.
Yeah. So I think it's changing things, but to bring it back to Leo's comment, I mean, for me as a creator or something, a writer, a designer, whatever it might be. I mean, when I went to art school, they didn't have computers in the, you know, they did for the next group of people that came in, but not for me. And how would that have, it would have changed things, but it might not have changed my career arc, you know? So I think AI is going to have that same kind of impact. I might still want to look, I'm a writer, but if I was coming up in the world today, maybe I'd be making TikTok videos. You know,
no, that's true.
The medium is maybe the way you communicate with people has changed. Yeah. I wrote books on paper,
honestly,
and got paid.
And got paid for that. You know, it sounds stupid. But
I still think, and it may always be the case that it does. It's not great, as good as a human in generating art or writing. It's still very mechanical and weird.
Yeah,
Richard and I use it more as an advisor. Right. Or as an information extractor. I think it's very good at that.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be true for a lot of people. I think that's what it's good at.
Yeah. And I worry that I think that, you know, just as we learned, really, I think we've learned that self-driving vehicles, not going to happen because it's too hard. It's too hard.
As terrible as drivers are here in Pennsylvania, the one thing that would be worse is everyone driving around in a Tesla.
Yeah.
You know,
so it's turning out harder than we thought, as is often the case in these things. And I think maybe writing and art are in that same bucket. But advising is, I think, understanding what AI can and cannot do.
I wonder, really important
to this whole process.
Years ago, a friend of mine from France started a publishing company or a company that worked with publishing companies to bring French fiction to English speaking languages. So I read a few of these books and they had that kind of halting off weird flavor, right? That AI sort of has right now. You know, you could kind of tell they weren't written by someone natively.
Our biology,
even though the person doing the translations was really good at that.
We're super well tuned to the slightest nuances in things like that.
Yeah.
And I don't know if a machine will ever get there.
It's like the uncanny valley. That's where it heads. Yeah. So maybe. Yeah, the real tell on AI is not some AI service that tells you it's AI. It's a human being saying, this feel right.
Yeah, you just kind of know. The princess's hand
it's just off.
It's a little bent. Yeah, it's not right.
Yeah.
And I think that that's fine. I don't mind that because it means writers and artists and photographers and painters and all those people will still have a job, graphic designers.
Sure.
But they will be AI assisted.
Probably. Oh, yeah.
I think back to when Microsoft started backing off on pursuing Windows piracy in developing nations.
Right.
Because those people couldn't pay for it anyway.
Yep.
It was no loss.
Right. And it was no loss. And it's like what Paul just described with the art that he had made for his articles. He was not going to pay someone for it.
Right.
That wasn't
going to be a thing. No one would. Right.
No, it's no loss. It's just new things being made with a new tool.
Yep. Yeah. There you go. It won't always be a net gain, I guess, but ideally it will be the helper. It's the thing that gets you over the top, you know, and I guess you could just come up with whatever forced examples, but I always use that PowerPoint thing. Like every once in a while I have to create a PowerPoint presentation. It's not what I do for a living. I'm not good at it, you know, and I getting help with something like that. Awesome. And before AI, we had various tools that Microsoft in this case created to make that better, and they worked or didn't, whatever, they were pretty good. And I think AI will take it to a new level too. And I think that's important because I am in that case, same story. I'm not going to go to some expert and pay them to make some ugly presentation beautiful. Right. I'm just not going to, but if AI can do this for me, fantastic.
You're just going to have a less ugly presentation.
Yep. Hopefully.
All right, I want to take a little pause that refreshes, and then we shall return with the Xbox segment and the back of the book. You know, you don't have to refresh if you don't want to, but you may, I guess.
A little splash on the face.
A little Coco Chanel used to have a bottle of Evian in a spritzer, and you just go, a little water in the face, that's all. You're watching or listening or even maybe sleeping through Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell. On we go with the Xbox segment. Now I'm a Diablo 4 player. I like Diablo 4. Yeah. I like that just mindless thumb mashing. As you bash.
Kill all the things.
Yeah. And I love the loot box.
I've been waiting. I've been waiting for Activision Blizzard games on Xbox Game Pass since they announced they intended to acquire this company.
Is this the first?
Yep, this is the first one. So when this deal went through, when was it, October, I think? Mm-hmm. I thought, here it comes, baby. And then two weeks into it, they were like, it's not going to happen by the end of the year. I'm like, okay, that stinks, but that's okay. January's quick enough. Yeah. So this is the first one. So I believe it's tomorrow or Friday this week anyway. Diablo 4 will be the first Activision Blizzard title to appear on Xbox Game Pass.
6 months it took, right, from the acquisition.
And there is not an iota of news because everyone asks, and I wish I knew about what happens next. Because now that we finally, this little bit of waiting is over, we're already moving on to the next thing. Interestingly, you will have to install the battle.net launcher on PC, right? Because I don't know why, because actually, who knows?
Well, that's where everything's saved on Battle.net. That's kind of...
This was written to that, and it's we're not changing that. I have to assume... Well, I shouldn't assume. I don't know. I'd like to think that kind of thing goes away. I mean, I don't know. But anyway, that's going to be a requirement on the PC.
I mean, it's a requirement for every new PC anyway. Like, yeah. They weren't able to get it retired and go all Xbox on it, I think.
Right. I don't know... I don't know what happens next. I get a lot of email from these guys, and this came down the pipe. I'm like, here we go. It's happening. And nothing. Enjoy this for what it is. And then normally what we get is usually two, sometimes three drops of Game Pass titles each month, you know, for beginning of the month, halfway through the month. I'm thinking because of all of the Activision Blizzard games that maybe it will be a little better than that for the rest of the year, but I haven't heard a thing. So I apologize. I don't know anything about it. Phil Spencer was interviewed recently and he had a lot to say, which I think is really interesting. He's open to third-party game stores on the Xbox, which makes absolutely zero sense, but is entirely in keeping with his whole, everybody should be able to play anything anywhere. Who cares? And it's like, Phil, you got the acquisition. You can stop talking like this. But whether anything like that happens, I don't know. I don't even care. That doesn't make any sense to me. But he did say something really interesting about gaming handhelds. And he basically threw Windows under the bus, which I found to be kind of amusing. He feels that Windows is too big and too heavy and is the wrong platform for this, and that we would be better off collectively as gamers if we had an Xbox device, portable gaming device.
And I think a lot of people agree with that. Xbox uses the Windows 10 kernel.
Yeah, but it's purpose made for this workflow or whatever, right? I mean, it's a Hyper-V kind of a thing, but you've basically got a parent partition and a child partition. The parent partition is a tiny, tiny thing for the UI. And then the game runs in the child, and that's the whole system, right? There's not a lot, we aren't getting notifications and other apps running and stuff like that. So, it sounds good. I mean, we've been asking about this for, I don't know, 20 years, Phil. So, whether the time for an Xbox portable gaming console has kind of come and gone, given mobile and all that stuff, is kind of unclear. But then again, you look at the popularity of Steam Deck and some of these other devices, and it's
Switch,
like
Switch and so forth. Like, handheld gaming's never been hotter.
Maybe, yeah. maybe the Xbox architecture isn't a bad place to look. I mean, isn't that technically what Windows 10X sort of was, right? Partitioned, we'll call it containerized, lightweight OS. Maybe there's an interesting architecture there for these things to look at.
There's a UX you could stick on top of that kernel that would fit on an 8-inch screen with a pair of controllers snapped to the side of it. Yeah. And that 10,000 milliamp battery on the back of it that lasts about 4 hours.
They made a version of the Xbox app that does that sort of for Windows for these particular devices, right? I mean, I don't know. This doesn't seem like... I used to always imagine that as Microsoft...
It fit neatly in a new consumer division.
There you go.
I wonder if you
they could use AI to figure out how to make it work. I had always imagined as each generation of Xbox occurred that they could create a portable system that would run the previous gen titles. Yeah. Like, then that would be kind of cool, right? Sony, of course, had the PSP and the PS Vita.
One would argue it's things become much easier with an ARM chip.
Exactly, which is still the current rumor for the next generation, true new generation of Xbox consoles. So,
I wonder if this whole
coming together,
you can get ARM running on Windows and you have the backing of the Windows team for the kernel anyway. Now you strip, now you just take that kernel, put a lighter weight UI on it just as a game selector and interface.
I love it.
You've got yourself a pretty good app, and that 10,000 milliamp battery just turned up to 7 hours instead of four.
Yeah. And they also have, enough games for this to make sense as just sort of a first party, you know, I mean, other developers will support it, but
the advantages to owning the game houses themselves is you can tell them, go recompile these things for ARM and figure it out.
Yeah, and that is, of course,
ARM and Windows come through.
Yeah, that kind of respect of your game library and backward compatibility is, I think, one of the key selling points of the Xbox platform, if you will.
It's also a part of Microsoft culture, right? That they tend to keep the backwards compatibility thing up for a long time.
Yeah, yep, that's right. And gamers love it. I mean, I think a Sony guy or whoever's in the back saying, you know, that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Although the best backwards compatibility these days is almost certainly on a PC. It is kind of interesting how you can play like older games still pretty well.
Right? Much older games, DOS games.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
And you know, I think you're sensing that intersection coming of the hardware.
You were talking just the kind of Microsoft mentality. I mean, throughout Microsoft's history, there have been various times where do we go PC or do we go dedicated device? You know, Media Center is a good example of one where they basically felt like they had to choose the PC because at that point in time, the device capabilities just weren't there. But I think a lot of people would agree if they could have just held out a little bit and done like kind of an Xbox style standalone device for the living room that didn't require all the IR blasting and the cables and the cable card stuff later on in the game would have made a lot more sense for that market, right?
And I built a home theater PC back in the day and went for ultra quality and all those problems. And I was the only person to keep it running. You know,
How many times we've both done this, right? You're on a work trip, your wife calls, she's like, I want to watch TV. What's going on?
Yeah.
And you know, here's the 27 step process. It's actually easier to land a 727 than it is to get this thing.
I had a network shop where I could come in the back and reset everything myself. Like, there you go.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. We've all done that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, an ARM based Xbox platform.
Handheld.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Sign me up.
Maybe. Yeah.
He was surprisingly vocal about it, I thought. But then again, that's him. He's plain spoken. I like Phil Spencer.
So funny because Asus and others are doing it in Windows.
Yep.
I know the Steam Deck is Linux, but the other ones are Windows, right?
You've got this trade-off, right? Linux is lighter weight, but doesn't have as many games, isn't quite as compatible. Windows got the compatibility, but it's heavier weight, and you want, you know, is there a...
I mean, I agree with Phil, but there are people who don't.
I mean, ideally, it just runs on the same hardware. In other words, you could go to these guys and say, look, you could run Windows, you can run Linux, you could run Xbox OS.
Is it a problem in miniaturization? I mean, we had the NUC. I mean, we can get a pretty small.
I feel like Xbox has only fairly recently, if you will, done the work to make their machines energy efficient, which has become a big thing, right? Which wasn't was not a big thing in the first couple of generations. So in the same way that PC, you know, to get a PC down from a tower to a laptop that made any sense, it wasn't a luggable, you know, a lot of work had to be done at the chipset level, at the software level, et cetera. So it's possible that this expected shift to ARM might be the final piece of the puzzle to fall into place to make this make sense.
Very interesting.
You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, an ARM, we were talking about emulation earlier, an ARM PC could emulate previous gen Xboxes easily, right? I don't know anything. I'm just guessing, but I mean, this seems doable to me. That's
and
all.
So smart people are working on it. We're not that clever. So somebody's already further down the path.
Yeah, exactly.
and maybe Phil's just hinting at something he's seen, really.
I don't mean to say the problem with Phil Spencer is I think if this were anyone else, you'd say, oh my God, can you believe he just said that? You know what that means? And unfortunately with him, that's not what it means. Phil is a gamer. He's altruistic and a kind of a cross platform. I'm not just the pro Microsoft Xbox guy sense. And sometimes he just talks about things he wants, which are just the things that we want. You know, it's not an indication of strategy or work or anything. Not necessarily. It could be, but you got to be careful not to read too much into it, like I said, as a gamer, you listen to this guy talk and you see what he said about this. You're like, yeah, like this would, this, yes, we yes, all, a lot of people want this.
So, let's take another timeout.
Well, actually, let me just finish.
Oh, you're not done.
I'm done. Yeah, just one quick
one more thing. So one more thing.
Yeah, so in addition to standalone Xbox consoles and to the PC stuff, Microsoft also has these services, right? So Game Pass and cloud gaming. And cloud gaming, you know, there are issues there with latency and bandwidth, et cetera, but they've been improving the service. And they are now testing mouse and keyboard support, which makes sense because those games can be PC games, right? Yeah. Where you might want to have that support. So there's a finite list of these games. It's a weird list, frankly. I mean, the browser-based version of Fortnite, Sea of Thieves, Grounded, Halo Infinite. Then you get, like, not any of the Gears of War game, but Gears Tactics is in there. Pentiment, which is brand new. Doom 64, which is a port literally of a Nintendo 64 game from not quite 30 years ago, about 30 years ago. Age of Empires 2, et cetera. So they are looking at, you know, they've done things where if you have a touch device, they have like an on-screen controller. Now they're going to be adding mouse and keyboard support where they can.
I don't want to play Age of Empires with a controller. That's just no fun. I want to click. Yep. I want to click on those gothics. All right. Now we can pause. I just want to, you know, just take a little time, just a moment to mention, I did already at the beginning of the show, Club Twit. Thank our Club Twit members for making this possible, especially those in the Discord who really make it fun to do these shows. In fact, all the time when I was on vacation, I was hanging out in the Club Twit Discord. It's a really nice social network. For your $7 a month, of course, you get access to that. You get ad-free versions of all of our shows. You get video of all of our shows. That's something new. We decided to make the, for instance, Paul does hands-on Windows. We decided to make the audio available to the public so everybody can hear it, ad-supported. And then we're going to keep the video for shows like that, Hands-On Macintosh, iOS Today, the Untitled Linux Show, so forth. Keep that in the club. So all the shows now that we were doing behind a paywall only are now available to the public as audio. Thank you, Lisa, for approving that change. But the video is in the club. But we want to give you a benefit for joining the club. You know, ad-free versions of the show, video versions of all the shows, the Discord, some additional content like the tomorrow's Inside Twit, that's club only. But I got to say, the real benefit is that you are helping us continue to do, I think, a job we do well and a job that needs to be done, especially in the age of AI, you know. Help you navigate what's going on in the world. If you listen to a show or two or three every week, please consider joining the club. $7 a month, twit.tv/clubtwit. Enough said. I'm sorry, not Thursday, Friday for our Inside Twit. I've said Thursday a couple of times. I meant Friday. Lisa and I will come on and tell you what's going on inside Twit. Now, back to the show we go and the back of the book, which means it's time for Paul Thurrott's Tip of the Week.
Yeah, this is almost like three app picks in a row, but as a tip of sorts, I have recommended Arc browser in the past. It's particularly good on the Mac. In fact,
I love it. That's what I'm using.
A revelation on the Mac.
Yeah, it's all I use. Yeah.
It requires a bit of work. Like I said, The navigation is a little different. You know, things are different, but it's one of those things like it clicks or it doesn't. But one of the problems on Windows is that it hasn't supported sync. And so on the Mac, they moved from iCloud based sync to their own sync engine specifically so they could do this with Windows. And now they have. So if you can get access to the Windows app, I know it's not broadly available yet. You can now sync your spaces and your other things between Mac and Windows. So that's been great for me because I kind of dabble in it on Windows, but on the Mac, I just use it. It's awesome. Like it's.
Yeah, I just got my acceptance to get Arc.
Okay. Yeah, me too. I just got mine. And now it syncs and everything.
So if you get it set up on the Mac, which is kind of ideal, you can now.
Not going to get me to buy a Mac.
No, okay. Don't worry. Well, it's okay.
Okay. Well, that my efforts in that vein have only just begun. But anyway, for now, I will just say, try Arc, and if you found it to be lackluster before, it's a little bit
better.
A little bit better now. Yeah.
It still has a way to go. I agree, but it's
yep. Yeah. Oh yeah. No, but it's not on Mac though.
It was written in Swift, and so this is the problem, right? It was written in a language really designed for Apple. That's why there's no Linux version and no mobile versions yet. Well, the mobile Arc on
iOS is actually really good and different, but it's not the same. It's not about a browser. It's a search.
It's not a browser anymore. Yeah. It's almost like a summarizer.
I love it. It's like using AI. Yeah,
it's very interesting.
Yeah. I turned Lisa onto it and I was really surprised because I thought, well, this is going to be a bit of a different way of thinking.
I can't quite use Arc on Windows full time, but I can on the Mac.
And it's beautiful.
Yeah. It's great. It's
a thing of beauty.
I've gone down the whole rabbit hole of their videos. Like if you're interested in this stuff, they make a lot of videos about why they do things a certain way. There's a really good video about them coming to Windows and they talked about, you know, writing the app in Swift and what that means. And it's very interesting.
Yeah.
To me, I don't know. Anyway, maybe not to you. Canva this week announced that they acquired Affinity, which was interesting coincidence of timing for me because I literally just bought on sale their entire suite of apps across platforms. So I can use them on Mac and iPad as well as Windows. So Affinity, for those who don't know, create low cost, relatively speaking, versions of apps for photos, vector graphics for design work, for apps, websites, whatever, and page publishing or desktop publishing. And it competes sort of with the Adobe apps, right, which are now CC and mostly subscription based, although you can get
hi everybody.
Hello, who's that?
Although you can get it's a voice from the future.
I don't know.
Paul, switch to the Mac. So you gotta move quick. No, it's so I would say that Affinity Photo 2 and Adobe Photoshop's Element 2024 are kind of on the same page, you know, functionally, whatever. The only thing Affinity doesn't have to me is a video editor, which is a little weird, but that's okay. But Canva has been buying some companies they own, like Pixabay. Is it Pixabay? No. What's that online photo editor, the web-based one that's really good?
Pixlr?
Or something, one of those things. But this is a big one. This is millions of dollars of acquisition. But they're literally going to try to take on Adobe, but do it in a way that is not subscription based. One thing which I kind of
Adobe
like.
Buy them.
That was well, they didn't. They weren't able to buy Figma, so maybe they would be stopped from this as well. I don't know, but I appreciate what they do. I've always I like Canva. I pay for and use the Affinity stuff. Actually it is Pixel. Yeah. Pixels. Oh, Pixabay is a source for images where that you can use in your articles and content and stuff. That's what that is. Pixabay. So anyway, they're coming together. It's something to look at. I don't use the other apps that much, but I use Affinity Photo 2 now. I used to use one, every single day. It's fantastic. And, I went through my little passkey phase with security and all that stuff. I was hoping to get by that. But Proton, which is very interesting to me, announced this past week that their Proton Pass password manager now supports passkeys on all devices and across all account types, meaning it's for free as well. And these, to be clear, are portable passkeys, which is not a FIDO standard, although Proton, like Dashlane and these other companies are working with everyone in the industry to make this a standard of some kind. And the point behind a passkey is that it's device specific. So you create a passkey on your iPhone, you create one on your Windows PC, and those are two separate things. But right. When a password manager supports this, like Dashlane does, the new Dashlane or now Proton Pass, you can create it once on one device. And if you're using other devices with that thing, with that password manager in this case, those passkeys will be available everywhere. Right. So that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And having done that with Dashlane, I can tell you it's an awesome capability. So this is something to look at. Proton is one of those companies that's, you know, privacy first, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it's going to come to Bitwarden eventually because they've got
Bitwarden already. No, Bitwarden already has. Well, I use Bitwarden to log into my passkey accounts all the time. You want to see?
Nope. No, I'm trying to remember what the limitation is on Bitwarden.
Yeah.
I don't remember. It doesn't matter. Anyway, these things, this stuff is all in flux. It's kind of hard to keep track of which, you know,
I use Bitwarden as a preference for storing passkeys. It used to be, of course, on my phone or my device.
Yeah.
But that's portable. So I want to have it there. So I can log into GitHub using passkeys on every single device that has Bitwarden. Wow. It works.
Yeah. So I do that with the Dashlane, but I stupidly spent about 15 minutes the other day obstinately trying to get a passkey just to save to the device.
Oh.
And could not make it work.
That's interesting.
just no problem putting it in dash lane. It worked everywhere. But I'm like, no, I want to use the...
Oh, no, they're not portable. That's the problem. And that's...
yeah, that is the
problem. That's not written into FIDO.
No, it will be, by the way. They're working on it. That's
I think it's a security issue. I don't think they want them to be moved around.
No, they do want them to be moved around. They just want it to be secure.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But the alternative is you end up making a lot of keys for each of your devices.
That's not good.
Each of your accounts.
Or so you use a password manager to do it instead.
Right.
Yeah.
So which is already portable.
I always worry about my Microsoft Authenticator on my phone, because losing that is
That's not
very
good.
Difficult to deal with.
Yeah, that's not good.
I don't like that single point, right? Yeah. I'd much rather have it in all of my devices.
By the way, I should mention Bitwarden is a sponsor, so disclaimer there. That's
I'm a Bitwarden user, you know.
Yeah, me too.
Yep.
Yeah.
I did good.
I was until recently, but I like Bitwarden.
Are you
quite
Dashlane now exclusively, or?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. It just works.
And that was because of the passwordless sign on.
I didn't want a master password. That was my big.
Yeah.
That was my big thing.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
Leo, let me explain to you what I do. I have a passkey for Dashlane that I store in Bitwarden, and then it's like an extra layer of security.
Yes. He needs his Google Authenticator to open it.
I mean, work through the logic of this. It's like 128-bit encryption.
Does Dashlane's passwordless login use passkeys, or do they have some other method?
It's passkeys.
Okay. Yep. Steve did a piece while I was gone I think it was last week on why passkeys are in fact preferable to YubiKey or some other hardware authenticator. So he's convinced that they are fully secure. So
I mean, I could get my wife to use passkey. She's never going to use a YubiKey.
No, that's right. That's exactly right.
I've been using YubiKeys for years, and I'd give it up in a second.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Hey, it's Run as Radio time, ladies and gentlemen. Here's Hello. Richard Campbell, your Run as Radio host. Hi, Richard.
Thanks, Leo. This week's Run as Radio is with April Edwards.
The weather this weekend is...
Coming up next, sports. I had a great chat with April Edwards. This is actually a few weeks ago when we were in NDC London together. So always fun to be face-to-face with someone when you're doing an interview. Just there's an energy to that. And April's a live wire at the best of times. And she was hopping. It was her birthday that week. We were had all sorts of fun together. And this was a conversation we were having. I'm like, we just need to record this. Because she is obviously a GitHub DevRel, like the advocate in that, but she's also shown that GitHub is for everything. You know, people store recipes in it because as you tinker with them, that source control effect of all of your changes being kept track of. But the integration of GitHub Actions, this idea that when you make a change to a document, it can kick off a workflow.
Wow.
Opens this really interesting angle for sysadmins that just says, hey, this is a way without buying a commercial product, you know, just having a GitHub account or preferably a GitHub Enterprise account, which is not free, to allow you to interact with code, to deploy pieces, to send off messages, you know, and with a detailed log of everything that's happening, including how it's failed, and a record, you know, each of those things actually gets stored. You can make revisions and those get handled for you. So we really ran down a whole series of scenarios where it's like, you can do this in GitHub Actions. And then it just becomes a natural tool suite that you can improve over time, just about repeatability for everything. And so it was just a really fun conversation to explore all that. And, you know, we're doing this anyway, somewhere inside of our organization. Generally, most admins now have some kind of workflow manager. But this is one your company or probably already pays for because they've got developers and you should be storing your scripts there anyway. But what if you didn't just store your scripts there? They ran from there too.
Nice. Yeah, I like GitHub. It's amazing what you get for very little money. I use it. I actually back up my – I have a website that's static based on Hugo, and I can use GitHub to serve it as well as my own server. So if my server fails, I just
– This is where my books are.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? They're on – yeah, that's good. That's nice.
Yeah. And Microsoft moved all their learn whole documentation engine, all that stuff that you search through. Yeah. It's all driven by GitHub. That's why at any point you can go in and correct something and go through a PR process.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, if we have talked about Run as Radio, that means there can be, what, one thing left to talk about Licka.
Yeah.
Our pick of the week.
And I really enjoy doing shows with Micah. I'm glad you're back, Leo. And I'm sorry. I did one last week that I felt a little bit bad about. Actually, I didn't really feel that bad about it. It was a bad, the bad whiskey story. Like it sent me down a path and I got a little angry and I needed to solve. I needed to feel better. And my Danish friend Casper pinged me privately, who's also a listener to the show, about a Danish whiskey that he wanted me to try. And we were talking about that. And so I started digging into Danish whiskey and fell into a story that's everything good about whiskey. Because the story that I told last week about Macklow was everything bad about whiskey. The ultimate commercialization without a care for the product. Like it was dreadful. But it's weird because you don't think about Danish whiskey. Like, why would you? It's just so odd. And the point is that the Danes haven't got a big history around whiskey because they didn't get into it till just very recently. Now, part of this has to do with older Scandinavian culture, where, of course, they were all farmers. You know, we talk about the Vikings being these, you know, marauders, but they were farmers first. They just, you know, got good at it and needed more land and went and acquired it by force. And so they were actually really strict about alcohol, and to the point where coming into the modern era, alcohol was so restrictive in Scandinavian countries across the board, it's relatively rare. But when when Denmark joined the ECC, or the EEC, this is the Europe, what became the EU, alongside that was a change in regulations and taxation for things like alcohol. So they aligned their regulation and taxation to the EU standard. And that just opened the door to the possibility of manufacturing alcohol and having it reasonably priced. And that happened. So around 2005, there was a group of fellows, nine of them actually, Danish fellows, in a little town called Stauning. And I'm probably mispronouncing it in the Danish. They got shapes to their words that are hard for my Canadian mouth to spit out. Actually, they were in a butcher shop. One of them was a butcher. There's a doctor and a bunch of interesting set of characters, bunch of engineers, but they started tinkering with making whiskey. They had a local barley farm. They even got some local peat, and they used part of the butcher shop to dry and malt the barley and made a small batch. They bought a couple of small alambic stills. These are the old style pre-pot still designs. They were Spanish. And they were able to make a few hundred liters of a small bottling. But they sent sample bottles to Jim Murray. And Jim Murray is one of the gods of whiskey. He writes the Whiskey Bible and so forth. The quote from Jim Murray, which they're apparently now allowed to use, but it's literally what he said to them, is, "What on earth is this? Whiskey lovers would kill their mothers for a bottle of this."
Wow.
This could possibly be some of the world's best peated whiskey. From a group of guys in a butcher shop in a little town in Denmark. So with Jim Murray telling them they've got a good idea, they were able to put together enough money to build the distillery just south of Stauning, which happens to be essentially the same latitude as Edinburgh in Scotland. Like there's a lot more to do. That part of the world is more like the Highlands of Scotland than a lot of other places by the ocean. You know, it faces into the North Sea. So they converted an old farm into a small distillery and switched the buildings over to do floor maltings, very old school, not the modern malting techniques, built a drying kiln, using peat and sometimes not. They bought a couple more Spanish pot stills that they directly heated them. They didn't use steam. They kept the system simple. By 2009, they were sort of assembled and starting to produce. They built a fizzer to spate right off the bat. Like you could watch us make our stuff. That was always their way. And they were all everything local, everything as local as it could be. They got smitten with rye. So they started buying local rye and malting it, which is very unusual. Most rye is just direct ground and we usually see rye in American bourbons, but they were malting rye, which is hard to do, but they were using a floor method. It doesn't go as well in drum methods for malting. So they had their first bottlings done in 2012, and you've not heard of them for a simple reason. They sold everything. They could not make enough. How well did they do? Their production was somewhere around 80,000 liters by 2013, but it was all instantly sold out. All of them, the top tier restaurants in Scandinavia, put it on the shelves. Noma, one of arguably the best restaurant in the world, had it on the shelf. Like, this was very good, very rare whiskey. And around then, Diageo showed up.
Oh, no, don't tell me.
Well, you know, that's not what happened. Diageo did not buy them up. Diageo made an investment in them. They refused to sell, but they said they did need some money and they could use the help. And so Diageo did buy into, as I've read the various bits and pieces around this, this idea that what these guys were doing was super old school whiskey, older school than the Scots were doing at that time, because they weren't trying to do the volume. So they bought 25% of Stouting, which gave them a substantial amount of funding. So they had the money to build out a larger distillery next door to the original farm. But they refused to use bigger stills. They started out with small stills. So instead of having a handful of small, big stills, they bought 24 pot stills from the Scottish manufacturers. It's just a ton of these little stills. They thought that floor malting was incredibly important, so they custom built their own automated floor malting system. So automatic turning and watering of both barley and rye. They not as efficient as the modern drum techniques, but they're sticking with their methods. They did the same for the rye. They didn't have the big cypress barrels to do mash in the old farm. So what they'd actually done is they kind of converted this washing machine into a rotary mash tun that would do extraction for them. They'd run it through multiple times. So they had a totally unique mashing approach, and they just scaled it in the new distillery. So they mash unlike anybody else in the world. They, all those 24 pot stills, all still direct fired, which is dangerous, but they have come to appreciate that the direct fire makes the still, the base of the still, so much hotter to get the distillate to actually start to evaporate, that it toasts some of the residues, which introduces a set of cereal flavors that they don't think they can get anywhere else. So it's old school, but it creates this other flavor to it. They do do a double distillation, which is very traditional Scottish wash and spirit still distillation. They use a pallet rack house, which I think would be the most modern thing that they do, where they are stacking the barrels upright on pallets high in their rack buildings rather than laying them on their sides. So their aging behavior is a little bit different. But that's all they had at the time, and they refused to change their methods. They're sticking with the style. They prefer American oak, both virgin, like unused, which they typically put the rye into, and the bourbon. And they also have used bourbon casks, which are, you know, common and popular and effective. Which they do a lot of aging with, but they also experiment with barrels all the time. So if you can get your hands on any of it, they've got wine finishes and tequila finishes, sherry finishes, you name it. So their primary production whiskey, what they make most of the time, are basically four versions, both a peated and non-peated malted rye and a peated and non-peated malted barley. But then they play with the bottlings. So the whiskey I'm going to recommend today, which you can find, it is available in the U.S. Flavor U.S. Website had it for about $85, is the Stouting Chaos Danish Whiskey. So this is arguably their most popular, most award-winning. They blend together their single malt and their peated single malt and the malted rye. So it's all from the same distillery. One would argue you could call it a single malt.
So is it? There's a hardcore edition and a regular edition. What's the? Is one's cask strength or
more peat?
More peat. If you like your peat, go with the hardcore. Different.
It's Danish peat, right? Like it is. This is not peat from Islay. Bottled at 46, which is your traditional, you know, normal clear bottling level. But just the most honest manifestation of whiskey I've seen in a long, long time. Wow. So I haven't had a chance to tour this place yet, but I'm going to be in Copenhagen later this summer. So I'm going to see if I can add a day or two and get down there and take a walk around. And but it's inspired a Danish whiskey industry that is very much based on this attitude of terroir, of making your whiskey from the thing in your area, which is very Danish. And it's turned into a successful industry. So Stouting may have been the first, but they are not the only that's happening in Denmark today.
Stouting Chaos. K-A-O-S. Yeah. Or if you really like your peat, get some hardcore.
Yeah, you'll find them mostly in Denmark. They're hard to come by otherwise, but there are a few that it brought to the U.S. So grab what you can. But the Chaos is the one you must like.
Their website, like many whiskey maker websites, has some terrific cocktail recipes,
yes,
by the way.
It does.
So if you can't find this, I was just looking through. I might do their little variation on the Manhattan. Looks pretty good.
Yeah. There you go.
You could just drop the peat into it, and then you'd have all the peat.
I'm going to forego the peat, but that's just personal preference.
Richard Campbell is at runasradio.com. That's where you'll find his shows, Run As Radio and .NET Rocks. And it's too late to go to the Fabric Conference this year, but next year maybe go to Vegas and see Richard.
We've already declared the dates. It'll be the first week of April, 2025. Nice.
And are you coming home after this, or what's up for you next?
I got a few days in San Francisco, so I'll do a show probably from Berkeley.
Nice.
Or maybe Menlo Park, depending on where I'm staying. And then I'm going to be home for a whole 12 days before I go to Romania, because Romania.
As one does.
As one
does. If you're in the mood, you could come over. You know, we're maybe not as close as you'd like, but we're about an hour from Berkeley. You could come over and do the show here if you wish.
But I just got to time the Wednesday. Yeah, maybe I could do one in studio. That'd be fun.
Think about it. It's just a possibility. Yeah, yeah. I can arrange for some whiskey to be delivered.
You know, I'm concerned about that stuff. It affects my judgment.
Yes. What a surprise.
I've never noticed that. That's weird.
I sip something
unique to you.
I define PaulTherott.com teacup so no one knows.
Nice.
No. Paul Therott is at Therott.com, THURROGood.com. That's where you'll find his writings. If you're a premier or premium member, you can see even more stuff, including the pages that eventually became his book, Windows Everywhere, which is available at leanpub.com, along with the field guide to Windows 11. Paul and Richard and I gather every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC to do the show. You can watch us do it live on YouTube, youtube.com/twit. Although, you know, the live show requires you be around at that time. If you are watching live, though, chat with us in the Club Twit Discord. There's always a nice conversation going on behind the scenes. And Paul and Richard go in there, too, which is kind of fun. After the fact, on-demand versions of the show are available at Paul's site, Therott.com, or at our site, twit.tv/ww. There's also a YouTube channel with the video of every show. And, of course, the easiest thing to do is subscribe to the podcast feed, and you can do that in any podcast player. Just look for Windows Weekly, and that way you'll get it automatically. Thanks to our Club Twit members. Thanks to all of you who join us. Thanks to Paul and Richard. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you in April for the next Windows Weekly.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
And welcome back, Leo.